Okay, so today we are starting the third quarter. Halftime's over, the band's gone, and now it's time to get back on the get back on the field and see what we have for the this last movement here in Job. We're starting with 29, and I'm just going to read, and this is what I want you to do. As you follow along with me, if there is something that you want to stop and talk about, I want you to just kind of raise your hand, kind of like you would if you're on a train. You would lift up and you would pull the string. Well, you have permission to reach up and pull the string whenever we need to talk about something. But I'll preface this by saying, this is chapter 29 is a little different from 30. Okay, 29, as I read it, I'm going to be honest with you. You know that Proverbs 31 woman thing that we always read at funerals for women that we know love the Lord, were dedicated to their families, and were tireless servants, and we always talk about this being the epitome of the perfect wife, the perfect woman kind of thing. Okay, well, Job 29 to me is sort of like Job casting this vision for the perfect guy. And then we get to 30 where he kind of goes back to saying, but this is the way things really are. Okay? So hang in there with me. Let's look at 29. And I think as we jump in, you'll see what I mean. So this is Job's final, I use the word defense, his final foray in this conversation that he's been having with these guys. And he's constantly been saying, oh, I wish God would be here for me to talk to him. I wish he would be right in front of me so I could. And he wants that tangible presence very, very badly. Hang in there. It's not in 29, 30, 31, but hang in there. So 29 says, and Job again took up his discourse and said, oh, that I were as in months gone by, as in the days when God watched over me, when his lamp shone over my head, and by his light I walked through darkness, as I was in the prime of my days, when the friendship of God was over my tent, when the Almighty was yet with me, and my children were around me, when my steps were bathed in butter. Isn't that an interesting statement? My steps were bathed in butter, and the rock poured out for me streams of oil. When I went to the gate of the city, when I took my seat in the square, young men saw me and hid themselves, and the old men arose and stood. The princes stopped talking and put their hands on their mouths. The voice of the nobles was hushed, for their tongue stuck to their palate. For when the ear heard, it called me blessed. And when the eye saw, it gave witness of me, because I delivered the poor who cried for help, and the orphan who had no helper. The blessing of the one ready to perish came upon me, and I made the widow's heart sing for joy. I put on righteousness, and it clothed me. My justice was like a robe and a turban. I was eyes to the blind and feet to the lame. I was a father to the needy, and I investigated the case which I did not know. I broke the jaws of the wicked and snatched the prey from his teeth. Then I thought, I shall die in my nest, and I shall multiply my days as the sand. My root is spread out to the waters, and dew lies all night on my branch. My glory is ever new with me, and my bow is renewed in my hand. To me they listened and waited and kept silent for my counsel. After my words they did not speak again, and my speech dropped on them. They waited for me as for the rain, and opened their mouth as for a spring rain. I smiled on them, and when they did not believe, and the light of my face they did not cast down. Do you see all that I'm talking about there? There was a lot of stuff that Job was saying this is the way it used to be. And as you look at all the stuff he's talking about, all the things that he said were true, and I believe that they were true. I don't think he's exaggerating. He was this kind of guy. He had this kind of reputation. That's why these other people, when they come to talk to him and say, how could you not have sinned, bud? If you look at what's going on, you were this, something must be disconnected because you were like this. So he's right. And do you see what I mean? You see this ideal, this kind of person? This is the kind of guy that it's like we all wish this is what our fathers and grandfathers were like. These are the people. You know, everybody respected my grandfather Borman. Everybody came to him for advice about farming, about life. You know, he was the guy that everybody went to. He did all the worrying for the family, literally. Finishes, he says, I chose a way for them and sat as chief and dwelt as a king among the troops, as one who comforted the mourners. This guy was somebody everybody looked up to, and he didn't have positional authority. He had relational authority, which is a very important thing. So that's the way things were. Now, there's a distinct difference if you look in here in chapter 30. But now, those younger than I mock me, whose fathers I disdained to put with the dogs of my flock. Indeed, what good was the strength of their hands to me? Vigor had perished from them. From want and famine they are gaunt, who gnaw at the dry ground by night in waste and desolation, who pluck mallow by the bushes, and whose food is the root of the broom shrub. They are driven from the community. They shout against them as against a thief, so that they dwell in dreadful valleys and holes of the earth and of the rocks. Among the bushes they cry out, under the nettles they are gathered together. Fools, even those without a name, they were scourged from the land. And now that I have become their taunt, I have become a byword to them. They abhor me and stand aloof from me. And they do not refrain from spitting at my face, because he has loosed his bowstring and afflicted me. Who's he, since it's capitalized? Now he's talking about God. Okay, that's the way he feels. Okay. They have cast off the bridle before me. On the right hand, their brood arises. They thrust aside my feet and build up against me their own ways of destruction. They break up my path. They profit from my destruction. No one restrains them. As through a wide breach they come, amid the tempest they roll on. Terrors are turned against me. They pursue my honor as the wind, and my prosperity has passed away like a cloud. And now my soul is poured out within me. Days of affliction have seized me. At night it pierces my bones within me, and my gnawing pains take no rest. By a great force my garment is distorted. It binds me about as the collar of my coat. He has cast me into the mire, and I have become like dust and ashes. I cry out to you for help, but you do not answer me. I stand up, and you turn your attention against me. You have become cruel to me. With the might of your hand, you persecute me. You lift me up to the wind and cause me to ride, and you dissolve me in a storm. For I know that you will bring me to death and to the house of meeting for all living. You get that? You understand what he's saying there? Okay, he's talking to God now, right? We know that clearly, okay? Everybody dies. What he's saying, okay? Everybody dies. Yet, does not one in a heap of ruins stretch out his hand, or in his disaster, therefore, cry out for help? Have I not wept for the one whose life is hard? Was not my soul grieved for the needy? When I expected good, then evil came. When I waited for light, then darkness came. I am seething within and cannot relax. Days of affliction confront me. I go about mourning without comfort, I stand up in the assembly and cry out for help. I have become a brother to jackals and a companion of ostriches. My skin turns black on me, and my bones burn with fever. Therefore, my harp is tuned to mourning, and my flute to the sound of those who weep. Two very different pictures, are they not? What we saw in 29 and how he's describing life now. Got anything you want to say? Any thoughts? Any questions? Okay. Like anything that I ever have a student write, I try to tell them, whenever you're through, you always have to have a so what. In your conclusion, you need to have something that deals with the question, so what? And basically what we're going to look at in Job 31 in just a minute is Job's so what. Okay? Before he has a friend say a few words and then God steps in and corrects everything. So, in 31, he goes on, he says, I have made a covenant with my eyes. How then could I gaze at a virgin? And what is the portion of God from above, or the heritage of the Almighty from on high? Is it not calamity to the unjust and disaster to those who work iniquity? Why would he bring that up? What does that sound like? Is not calamity to the unjust and disaster to those who work iniquity? Who's been spouting that out? Okay. So he's kind of questioning, going back to what these friends of his have been saying. Does he not see my ways and number all my steps? If I have walked with falsehood and my foot has hastened after deceit, let him weigh me with accurate scales and let God know my integrity. Okay. If my step has turned from the way, or my heart followed my eyes, or if any spot has stuck to my hands, let me sow and another eat, and let my crops be uprooted. If my heart has been enticed by a woman, or I have lurked at my neighbor's doorway, may my wife grind for another. In other words, somebody else take his wife as wife, and let others kneel down over her. For that would be a lustful crime. Moreover, it would be an iniquity, punishable by judges, for it would be fire that consumes to abaddon and would uproot all my increase. If I have despised the claim of my male or female slaves when they filed a complaint against me, what then could I do when God arises? And when He calls me to account, what will I answer Him? Did not He who made me in the womb make Him? And the same one fashion us in the womb. In other words, Job is acknowledging that other people are just like him. He's not any better than they are. And he's not in any way saying that he is more of anything than someone else, especially in these comparisons that he's making. If I have kept the poor from their desire, or have caused the eyes of the widow to fail, or have eaten my morsel alone and the orphan has not shared it, from my youth, he grew up with me as with a father, and from infancy, I guided her. If I have seen anyone perish for lack of clothing, or that the needy had no covering, if his loins have not thanked me, and if he has not been warmed with the fleece of my sheep, if I have lifted up my hand against the orphan because I saw I had support in the gate, let my shoulder fall from the socket, and let my arm be broken off at the elbow. For calamity from God is a terror to me, and because of His majesty, I can do nothing. If I have put my confidence in gold and called fine gold my trust, if I have gloated because my wealth was great and because my hand had secured so much, if I have looked at the sun when it shone or the moon going in splendor, and my heart became secretly enticed, and my hand threw a kiss from my mouth, that too would have been an iniquity calling for judgment, for I would have denied God above. Have I rejoiced at the extinction of my enemy or exulted when evil befell them? No. I've not allowed my mouth to sin by asking for his life in a curse. Have the men of my tent not said, who can find one who has not been satisfied with his meat? The alien has not lodged outside, for I have opened my doors to the traveler. Have I covered my transgressors like Adam by hiding my iniquity in my bosom, because I feared the great multitude? And the contempt of families terrified me and kept silent and did not go out of doors. Oh, that I had one to hear me. Behold, here is my signature. Let the Almighty answer me. And the indictment which my adversary has written, surely I would carry it on my shoulder. I would bind it to myself like a crown. I would declare to him the number of my steps. Like a prince, I would approach him. Okay. Those last couple, did you follow the image? What's he saying? Okay, he's saying all these things. Again, he's taking care of people. Okay. He's saying, didn't I take care of people? Didn't I live out what I say is true? Okay, about what I believe, what my faith is. Okay. Now, John, go back like where you were. There you go. Okay. And then 35, he says, oh, that I had one to hear me. Here's my signature. Let the Almighty answer me. And then he's saying the indictment that his adversary has written. Right now, who are his adversaries? Unfortunately, the three amigos, his buddies, okay, who have come to comfort him, correct him, bring him back to the way. At this point in this story, on earth, these are the only people that he sees figuratively in front of him who are accusing him. He's saying if that were not true, if these things were true, he would wear them so that people could see them. That's how literal he would be. He cannot agree with them because what they're saying, what they've accused him of, is not true, and he will not in any way compromise his integrity. All right, so John, go on. If my land cries out against me and its furrows weep together, if I have eaten its fruit without money or have caused its owners to lose their lives, let briars grow instead of wheat and stinkweed instead of barley. That's essentially a curse on the land. So he's saying if all this stuff's true, I'd welcome those kind of things. But they're not true. All right. That's three chapters. Anything else you want to observe or talk about in those three chapters? You know, as I look at him saying these things, he's not trying to prop himself up. He's just calling it like it is. Because all they're doing is saying, what did you do? And their finger has literally been in his chest, poking him. And this is like Prince Albert is out of the can. Okay? He's not going back. Okay? And everything is out in the open now. And he's saying there is nothing. There's nothing to talk about. Because I didn't do any of this stuff. This is who I am. This is what I've done. And God's the one that I don't understand at this point. And he's still crying out to God. Now, one thing that I do think about as we get to this point, and I've probably said this to you before, maybe even as we've talked about this, anybody who can be mad at God still believes in God. And some people make bad choices about what they do or don't understand that God is doing in their lives. Some people don't like what God has chosen to allow them to experience. And in that, they choose to withdraw or, you know, do the, you know, I'll show him and then walk off figuratively, sometimes literally. But the reality is, even though they're angry at God, they are not saying there's not a God. What they're saying is they don't understand him. They don't understand his ways. They don't agree with his ways. And so they are, what would you say? What do people do when they get mad at God? Oh, some do. We get more there. You know, I mean, hopefully we get more there, okay? But, you know, for me, there's two things that I'm doing this with my finger so I don't forget, because I will forget. One is we ultimately have to trust God that stuff we don't understand has a purpose. That goes back to what we've been talking about all along, is that we have to trust that the stuff we go through, the trouble, because this is, remember, we're looking at Job and we're talking about having a theology of trouble, our trouble. And we have to trust God if we're going to have any peace in this life. Yes, that's true. Again, what the purpose is what? What is God's greatest, what is His only purpose for us? We want to add in a bunch of other stuff, but His one ultimate purpose for each of us is fill in the blank. And the answer is that we would be more like Jesus. And Jesus didn't get there without real trouble. It, you know, you look in first, talking about suffering and trial, and just because we don't suffer just like Jesus, you know, because we're not being nailed to a cross, we kind of want to start acting like, no, his suffering is entirely different from ours. But yet he was ridiculed, he was, you know, maligned, you know, people said bad things about him that were not true, they lied about him. I think if he had had anything, they would have stole it. We're supposed to be more like Jesus. And everything that God allows into our life is to, in some way, help us become more like Jesus. It's not to placate us. It's not to give us easy lives. It's not to help us improve our standing in the community, or, as the American church has often fallen into the ditch of, we want to make our children more moral. You know, that's not what this is about. About Jesus. About being more like Jesus. So we have to trust that whatever God allows in our lives, its purpose, if we will trust Him, is to make us more like Him. And realize that, especially those that we love, who we know trust Him, they're with Him. And we're going to miss them, but they're with Him. There's going to be a day where, you know, this Christmas has really gotten me pretty good, because, you know, it's been a lot of change in life for Smith family. You know, Luke's in college off, and Abby's in Miami, and my dad passed away this last summer, and, you know, holidays don't have the same kind of flow that they did. And it's not bad. It's just I'm trying to find my way. Because it's not the same. It's not, it's a matter of, what am I going to do with it? You know, I'm still kind of trying to figure some of that out emotionally. But I know, and I have peace in the middle of it, even though I'm more emotional than usual. I don't show it to you guys a whole lot. It's just, that's kind of my personality. Are you ready to get the last slap in the face comes next week. We get that guy that I keep using his name instead of Eliphaz. Well, it's Elihu. Elihu. I know it was there. So we're going to listen to Elihu next week. See what Elihu has to say, because he's tired of listening to Job. Guess what? Right at the end of Elihu, the real star steps in and starts to set everybody right. I can't wait for that. So we'll end there. Artie, would you close us in prayer?